Hi, Patrick Cox here in the World Newsroom in Boston, and this is The World in Words number 27. Today, part two of The World in Words election alphabet, which means we're passing out the words Vietnam and war. We're checking in on Chinese language ballots. And of course, we just have to go nuclear.
As a free man, I take pride in the word Ich bin ein Berliner.
Why, as an American, do I have to push a button to speak English?
There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Why, thank you, Borat. Sorry you don't get to vote in this election. The World is a co-production of the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. You can hear the big show on more than 250 public radio stations around the United States. For more on that, and for more on all of our podcasts, go to theworld.org. So, last week, in The World in Words number 26, we began alphabetizing the U.S. presidential election campaign. A is for Alma, B is for Bangladesh, etc., etc. We got through to the letter M, Maverick, by the way. The rules for this alphabet are pretty loose. I'm hitting language issues, foreign policy, comparisons with other countries, immigration, all of those kinds of things. So bring on the second half of the electoral alphabet.
N is for nuclear power.
And on the energy beat is the world's Jason Margolis. Jason, a lot of people these days are taking a second look at nuclear power. Are Barack Obama and John McCain among them?
Well, John McCain is a big proponent of nuclear power. That is a centerpiece of his energy plan. He wants to build 45 nuclear plants by the year 2030. Obama says he does not oppose the use of nuclear power, but he wants to look more into it. A lot of the safety issues, the storage of nuclear waste.
So what does that mean in terms of how much of the energy we use would come from nuclear power under a McCain or an Obama plan?
It would be a significant part of the mix, put it to you that way. We're talking 20%, 30%, but it would not be our sole source of energy.
Okay, so now I want to play you a piece of tape. This is Sarah Palin during the vice presidential debate.
An armed, nuclear armed, especially Iran, is so extremely dangerous to consider. They cannot be allowed to acquire nuclear weapons.
My question is, what is it with all of these politicians mispronouncing the word nuclear?
Well, there's a particular reason you could say that they all do this. Perhaps it's our molecular makeup, or perhaps it's our muscular composition. Now, the reason why I'm saying those words and emphasizing them, muscular, molecular, in particular, because they all end in ular.
It's not because you're strange.
No. Well, perhaps it's a dual reason, but maybe our tongues are used to saying the ulers. There's not a lot of words in English that end in clear, so it's nuclear, nuclear. We want, even there, I wanted to say it, nuclear. So it's possible that when we just say things very quickly, we want to say cular, particular, muscular, nuclear. So if you're not really putting a lot of thought in pronouncing something correctly, your tongue wants to say nuclear. That's one theory I've read.
And we're talking about quite a few presidents, former presidents of the United States have used this pronunciation.
Right. Eisenhower used to pronounce it that way. Carter had an interesting pronunciation, which I can't even repeat. I was just listening to it a few minutes ago. Kind of a southern twangy, almost nuclear. I can't even redo it for you. And you have to think that he knew how to pronounce it correctly because he was a naval officer on a nuclear submarine. Also, his vice president, Walter Mondale, mispronounced it regularly. And of course, George W. Bush is most famous for saying nuclear all the time.
I have one thought about maybe why people might say it, aside from your theory, and that is when you utter the word, maybe you're just conjuring up an image of just sheer massive destruction. You're thinking Three Mile Island, Hiroshima, Chernobyl, just as you're saying it, and that might make you all nervous about what it is you're saying and how you're saying it.
Yeah, that's a distinct possibility. It's such a horrifying word that maybe we gloss over it, we soften it a bit. I'd buy that a bit, but I also think maybe this is not my theory. I've read it. No, I've read in various places that perhaps some politicians mispronounce it on purpose because it makes them seem more folksy, more in touch with the common man, if you will.
The World's Jason Margolis. Jason, thanks very much.
Thank you.
O is for Obama Japan.
That is the somewhat sleepy town of Obama Japan, whose residents are getting quite excited about, well, becoming a tourist attraction of sorts. The word Obama does have a meaning in Japanese, and to get that meaning, over to Japanese kanji character specialist Eve Kushner.
The word Obama combines two characters. The first means small, and the second means beach. So Obama in Japanese is a small beach. I believe this is the only Obama. And then that Bama sound is actually the same character as in Yokohama. It's just that in Obama, the pronunciation changes a little bit. But Yokohama means side beach. So it's very common to have place names named after natural components. And we do the same thing in English, but I find it horribly mundane. Pleasant Valley, Pine Hill. It's somehow, to me, much more lyrical when it's Obama.
Eve Kushner, author of the forthcoming book Crazy for Kanji. Much more from Eve in a future podcast.
P is for Pakistan.
It's got nukes. It may be the country Osama bin Laden is currently calling home. Its politics are a mess after 8 years of military rule, which ended late last year, and the assassination, a month later, of the country's most popular democratic leader. The next American president is going to have to pay a lot of attention to Pakistan.
Q is for Queen.
America, of course, doesn't have a queen, unless you count Paris Hilton. On January 20th, 2009, Inauguration Day, the next president will assume the position of head of state, having been elected by the people. Now, it's true that in a place like Britain, having a monarch as head of state, it has its advantages. But on the day the queen travels from Buckingham Palace or Windsor or wherever it is to Westminster, and she opens Parliament by delivering a speech written by the elected government, well, see what you think.
My lords and members of the House of Commons, my government will continue to pursue policies which entrench economic stability and promote growth and prosperity.
Maybe, just maybe, that's a little bit awkward.
R is for Russia.
Which, in case you were wondering, you most certainly can see from Alaska, as Governor Palin has famously claimed. Well, you can see it if you happen to live on the island of Little Diomed in the Bering Strait. From there, you get a crystal clear view of the Russian-owned island of Big Diomed, which is less than 3 miles away. But as far as I know, there have been no sightings, at least from Alaska, of Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin's soul.
S is for Spanish language TV.
Both Barack Obama and John McCain have been courting the Latino vote. They're doing this in part by dumping a ton of money on Spanish language TV. Their advertising in Spanish has smashed all previous records. A month ago, both were running highly misleading ads about each other's immigration records. Now, closer to the election, the ads are generally more positive, but they're also very different from English language ads. We wanted to explore a little bit more of that on The Big Show. So we talked to Pilar Morero. She is political editor of the Spanish language newspaper La Opinión in Los Angeles. And here she is talking with the world's Marco Werman.
Let's listen first to part of the new Obama radio ad airing in Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, as well as the Big Four.
Cuando se trata de impuestos y la economía, ¿quién está de tu lado? John McCain promete recortarle miles de millones de dólares en impuestos a las grandes corporaciones. Pero para 100 millones de hogares, nada. El plan de salud...
Pilar, what is the message you're getting from that ad, at least the portion we played?
Well, it's an ad about the economy, and it focuses on taxes. It starts by telling Latinos that McCain wants to give tax cuts to large corporations and that his health plan... It's going to mean more money in the pockets of the health care companies instead of the people. And they are playing with the idea that Republicans are hiding something from the people. And that plays to the mistrust that they know Latinos feel about Republicans right now.
Is the focus on taxes and health care a change from what you've heard in other Obama Spanish language ads?
Yeah, it seems to me it's focusing more closely on these two issues instead of generally the issue of the economy and we're going to do better for you, the general message that they usually bring to Latinos in Spanish. You know, in particular, they're focusing on taxes and on healthcare, because they know that healthcare is one of the major issues for Latinos, and taxes, of course, is an issue for everybody.
Okay, well, let's listen to McCain's message. This is his latest Spanish language ad, which is only airing in the big four Latino states.
Los expertos predicen que los nuevos impuestos y mandato para un seguro de salud obligatorio de Obama y sus aliados liberales del Congreso eliminarían empleos. Si tienes
un negocio... Pilar, what's the message here with John McCain's ad?
A big focus of the McCain campaign has been on Latino small businesses. He really doesn't talk that much to Latino workers. He basically always talks about small businesses. He knows that Latinos have a lot of small businesses. And I think he's just talking about taxes and about how, you know, the liberal agenda that Obama has and is going to raise taxes on these businesses and it's going to be hard for them to hire. So it's kind of a scary tactic for these small businesses that they're going to be getting a tax raise with Obama.
When you hear the McCain and Obama campaign's Spanish language ads and then you hear the English language ones, what are the biggest differences? What strikes you about the two of them?
A lot of the ads in Spanish, in certain states, have to do with immigration. The funny thing is that in previous campaigns, we have seen how immigration is used in a negative way to attract the conservative voters. In this campaign, and I'm talking about English language, of course, in this campaign, it's been used in Spanish only, and it's to try to convince Latinos who is better on immigration, McCain or Obama. And basically, they're fighting over who's better on immigration and who has been better for Latinos and who will, you know, get immigration reform faster. So that's a major change. But of course, you won't hear those in English.
And are Latinos buying those arguments?
Latinos are, according to the polls, convinced that they will be better off with the Democrats. And I think that's part of the problem that McCain has, that even though he has a decent record on immigration, not only during the primary, not only he turned away from it to satisfy the right of his party, but, you know, he's saying that he wants to emphasize enforcement first. So it's contradictory. People don't know if, you know, it's the message in English or the message in Spanish that they should believe.
Pilar, here's something I've wondered about. It deals with the ends of the Spanish language ads. Here's how Obama's campaign ads end.
Soy Barack Obama, candidato para presidente, y apruebo este mensaje.
And here is the end of the McCain campaign ads.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
Okay, Pilar, so do Latino voters care whether the candidates themselves use Spanish, even if it's only to approve the ad?
Gosh, I guess it's an emotional thing. I guess some people might think, well, he's trying, you know, he's trying to communicate. And I don't think it has a big impact, to tell you the truth. In the past, we have seen, you know, many attempts and some tragic from these guys speaking Spanish. But I don't think that's a big issue for Latinos.
Pilar Marrero, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
T is for transliterate.
This is a good one. It's all about voting. Voting is supposed to be simple, right? You go to your polling station, you select your candidate, and you vote. But in some Chinese-American communities, there's something else to think about. Candidates' names appear on federal ballots written in Chinese characters. That's true in certain parts of California, New York State, but not in Massachusetts. Here's the world's Alex Galifant.
On November 4th, voters in Boston's Chinatown will be offered a bilingual ballot. No great news there, says William Galvin, Secretary of State for Massachusetts.
We've had bilingual ballots here in Massachusetts now for some time as a result of legislation sponsored by me. That means that the ballots in the case of Chinese and Vietnamese, as well as Spanish, are translated with regard to all the instructions, what the offices are, what the lengths of terms are. The one thing that's not transliterated is the names of candidates.
Now that's an important word right there, transliterated. And it's not the same as translated. If you translate something, you're corresponding a word in one language with its meaningful equivalent in another language. But if you're transliterating a word into Chinese, you're trying to represent that word in the corresponding characters of a different alphabet. Or this.
You match the sounds in one language to another language.
This is Shengli Feng. He directs the Chinese language program at Harvard.
If you have a vowel, then corresponding to another vowel. However, the two phonological systems of the two languages are different. So you have to have manage so which kind of sounds are sayable in this language but corresponding to something there. But if not sayable, you don't have this kind of a consonant or vowel, then you correspond on something similar.
So the problem with writing or saying an English name in Chinese is that the two languages don't share either a common alphabet or even a common set of sounds. You have to make the best fit you can. And that's a problem for William Galvin, the man Massachusetts has charged with protecting the integrity of electoral ballots.
The fundamental reason I object to transliteration is because it's not an exact situation where you can provide an exact an indication of what the name is. It's an approximation.
Not good enough, in other words.
Ballots have to be precise.
It gets more complicated. Chinese characters correspond to specific sounds. And they can correspond to specific meanings, often more than one, depending on how you pronounce the character. Take Feng's own name.
My surname is Feng, okay, F-E-N-G with a second tone. Don't say first tone. First tone means crazy. Feng Shengli, no good.
Feng Shengli,
that's a high tone and a leveling tone.
And that just makes you crazy.
You make everybody crazy.
If a Chinese name is tricky, constructing a Chinese version of an English name is fraught with danger. In his Harvard office, Feng explains.
So each character has a shape, and each character has a meaning. You don't want to translate the sound into meaningful syllable, then one by one. And you try to make meaningless syllables combined together in order to let people know this is a full name.
Okay, let's look at some of the names that people are going to be seeing on their ballot papers in this election. The first one on the list is John McCain. How would we construct that?
McCain, we don't have a M word, but M is more closer to a Mandarin. K is a Kai, and N is N. N is one meaning, Kai is one meaning, M is one meaning. M, Kai, N. But when they put together, it doesn't mean anything.
What are the individual meanings?
In mainland China, Mai means wheat.
The crop?
Yeah, exactly, wheat. And Kai means victory.
It means victory.
Victory, yeah. I don't know, this is working. McCain can be a victory.
This is working out pretty well for John McCain.
and N is kindness.
Okay, so the victory of kind wheat.
You can call that.
But no one reads it like that. No one reads wheat, victory, kindness. Everyone knows it's John McCain.
No. No one think of the meaning. It just capture the sound. Immediately they figure out this is a foreign name.
So what about the name Obama?
In classical time, Ao means this adjective means deep and profound.
Sounds pretty good for the Democratic presidential candidate. Ba can be transliterated as a meaningless suffix, just the kind of neutral sound you need for a name. But ma is different, and here we get into the idea of Chinese tones. The way you say the character changes what it means.
We have ma, four tones, each one has a meaning. But this time, you use the third tone, that would be the horse.
What's a ma?
Ma, very good. So put three together, people immediately recognize there's a foreign name.
So they don't think Obama is a profound horse?
No, I wouldn't think that way.
But candidates' names will not be transliterated on Boston's bilingual federal ballots. They'll only appear in English. That could be a problem for some elderly Chinese-American voters. Such voters are often exempt from English literacy requirements for citizenship. Many cannot recognize the letters of the English alphabet, so says Lydia Low, who directs Boston's Chinese Progressive Association. She explains that elderly voters have developed a workaround. They find out in advance the order that the candidates will appear on the ballot, then they get the number of the candidate they want.
Number 5, and then they'll count down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Get a complicated-looking ballot, and it could get confusing.
It can lead to voting for the wrong candidate, which is what people's fear is.
That's William Galvin's fear, too. The Massachusetts Secretary of State says he's just not convinced that transliteration produces a clear, unambiguous ballot.
This is not a situation where we have simply said no. We have indeed looked into this. We have consulted with academics. We have asked for advice. And uniformly, we've been told that various people can come up with various transliterations, and that's the essence of the problem.
Galvin says he's open to finding other solutions. Putting candidates' pictures on the ballot might help, for instance. Any solution would have to preserve the clarity and integrity of the electoral process. And that's the challenge when dealing with an ancient language like Chinese, a language in which sound and meaning are, to this outsider at least, mysterious, changeable notions. For The World, I'm Alex Galifant.
U is for Undersecretary of Multilingual Affairs.
In the U.S. government, there is no such position as the Undersecretary of Multilingual Affairs. This is a scandal. On the other hand, the chances that the next president will create such a position are, well, zero. Tragic.
V is for Vietnam and W is for war.
These two words may have especially poignant meaning for John McCain. But even for those in American politics who didn't fight in Vietnam, who weren't captured, imprisoned, tortured, those two words, Vietnam and war, they go together. Recent presidents have tried to prize them apart with varying degrees of success. It just isn't very easy to banish that old ghost of military failure. The World's Jeb Sharp recently reported a series on how wars end. Once the election's over, I'm going to do a segment with Jeb on her series. There's a lot of really rich linguistic stuff there. But for the time being, let me play you the opening of her report on the 1991 Gulf War. That was a war, for many of those involved on the American side, that was designed to be as unlike Vietnam as a war can be. Here we go.
When U.S. troops returned from the Persian Gulf in 1991, they were treated to victory celebrations and a ticker tape parade. It was the parade Vietnam War veterans never got. In his autobiography, Colin Powell describes the thrill of riding up Broadway in New York in a 1959 Buick convertible. He and other architects of the Gulf War had cut their teeth in Vietnam. In planning the engagement with Iraq, they had one overriding goal. This war would be short and sweet. The crisis began when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait on August 2, 1990. Over the next few months, the United States worked to build an international coalition to take action against Iraq. In January 1991, Operation Desert Storm began.
Just 2 hours ago, Allied air forces began an attack on military targets in Iraq and Kuwait.
President George H.W. Bush stressed that the action had the consent of the United Nations and Congress. He said the goal was to drive Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait, and he promised that the coalition would act quickly and forcefully.
I've told the American people before that this will not be another Vietnam. And I repeat this here tonight. Our troops will have the best possible support in the entire world, and they will not be asked to fight with one hand tied behind their back.
The president was able to keep his promise. In little over a month, he was back in front of the cameras.
Kuwait is liberated. Iraq's army is defeated. Our military objectives are met.
These were short sentences used to describe a short campaign, 6 weeks of air attacks and a mere 4 days of ground operations. And when he addressed the troops by radio a couple of days later, the president proclaimed that the ghosts of that previous conflict had been exorcised.
The specter of Vietnam has been buried forever in the desert sands of the Arabian Peninsula.
Not so fast, Mr. President. As it turned out, America's quick exit from Iraq back then left a whole bunch of unfinished business. And guess who's there now? And the next president, how he deals with the troop presence in Iraq, and how much what he does is compared to Vietnam, this will be a real key to his legacy, to his success.
X is for X-ray.
Camp X-ray. Guantanamo. Camp X-ray, you may remember, was the first detention facility at the U.S. Naval Base in Cuba. It wasn't much more than a block of open-air cages, and it was closed 6 years ago, just a few months after it was opened, replaced by the semi-permanent Camp Delta. The Bush administration, of course, has not used the term prisoners or prisoners of war to describe those who are being held against their will at Guantanamo. For legal reasons, it prefers to call these people detainees. It's not clear what the next president will call them, but it is clear he'll have to call them something. Because a couple of weeks ago, the administration conceded that despite public pronouncements to the contrary, Guantanamo detention camp will remain open into the next presidency.
Y is for Yugoslavia.
Once a country, now a nostalgic idea. Yugoslavia has been well and truly Balkanized. It is the Balkans, after all. It is Balkanized into 7 different countries. President George Bush the First stayed out of the fighting. So did President Clinton, for 3 years at least. When he did order an intervention, the war in Bosnia ended almost immediately. We're still sorting out the lessons of the breakup of Yugoslavia. And we're certainly still sorting out the lessons of Iraq and Afghanistan. All of this is plenty for the next president to be thinking about when fighting breaks out in some part of the world and there are calls for getting the U.S. military involved.
Z is for Zealandia.
Zealandia is a very small town in Canada. And it is also a very small town where Luc Doucet is not from. Come on, give me a break. This is a Z, and he's Canadian after all. Anyway, more on Luc Doucet and his strange connection to the U.S. election from the world's resident Canadian, Andrea Crossan.
There are certain songs that stir national pride in a Canadian, like O Canada being sung at a hockey game.
O Canada, our home and native land.
Or a beer ad devoted to being a Canuck.
I know.
Okay, so how about a Canadian singing this?
Well, I wish I was American. I wish I was American. I wish I was American right now.
Luc Doucet is a Canadian alternative country singer. He lives in Toronto, and he's releasing this song in time for the final weeks of the U.S. election season.
1, 2, 3. Will I go down to the polling station, cast my vote for the good of the nation? I wish I was American right now. I'd join the mob in Tomahawk Park, whose bite is a collective bark that says we're all Americans right now. So I wish I was American.
I actually wrote the song originally before the previous election. And I wrote it because it occurred to me that while Canadians are deeply affected by the U.S. election, I mean, everybody, I think quite likely everybody around the world is affected by who occupies the White House. So it occurred to me that we care so much about American politics, but we're, of course, we're not able to participate because we're not citizens.
So Doucet's suggestion? To collect all the unused ballots from Americans who don't register to vote.
They should be distributed to foreigners on a first-come, first-served basis because there are so many people around the world that care so deeply about American politics.
No, I don't have to be a resident to care about who's president when the long arm of his reach is far and wide. And I do love the land that brought me jazz, country, western, rock and roll. I wish I was American right now. I wish I was.
Doucet says he's received mixed reactions to the song. Canadians, not surprisingly, aren't inclined to lift their Molsons and sing along. Doucet says he's had a more enthusiastic response when he's played the song recently to an American crowd.
After I played the set, I was going out to the bar, and these two large, sort of strapping young guys came up to me and said, "Hey, we just want you to know we heard your song that where you say you wish you were American, and we're soldiers, and we've just returned from our second tour of duty in Iraq." And to be honest, we often think of Canadians as being the sort of smug, self-righteous liberal types, and after we heard your song, we realized that you weren't one of them, which of course made me laugh, because the ironic part of the song is that it is somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but critical.
For the record, Doucet says he's proud to be Canadian. He says his song is just about wanting Americans to appreciate the value of their votes and that they should exercise their democratic right on November 4th. Luc Doucet's currently touring Europe playing songs from his latest album, Blood's Too Rich, and then he heads back home to tour Canada. For The World, I'm Andrea Crossan.
Oh, I wish I was American. I wish I was American. I wish I was American right.
That's our A to Z. Thanks for listening. I'll be back with a regular podcast in a few days, complete with an untranslatable foreign word, I promise. Send me your comments and complaints. The address is language@pri.org, or post your comment at the Facebook group, The World in Words. Tell your friends. Until next time, bye.